Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Thank you so much, Dr. Martin, for joining us this morning just to help educate the public on what's going on here. Good morning.
Good morning.
So can you take me through it? And I think, you know, on one hand, I will say this, that I think for all of us, we're all doing like the, you know, eggs, the protein diet. You have them for breakfast. It's popular. But also it affects our agriculture business, especially here in Pennsylvania. And so I know there's a lot of misinformation. So we just want to like kind of parse through that and explain what's going on and then what's being done.
Sure, happy to do so. As some of you may know, that Pennsylvania is one of the top five egg-producing states in the country, with Iowa being number one. And the flu that we have seen this particular year has affected all of the top five producing states. And so when you have a major disease that causes massive loss of life, that does cause supply and demand issues that we see. It's very similar to what we saw with it to be, you know, not to be flippant or anything, but it's the same thing we saw basically during COVID when people were starting to go after toilet paper, and we saw the price of toilet paper go out of sight too. So I think, you know, a hint of caution is probably necessary to allow time to take effect to where we can move eggs around to supply the needs of those that are consuming them.
Yeah, and that's great advice to not try to. Usually I just, in my family, though, we have a big family. We go through a lot of eggs, and so I found
absolutely.
Like,
we eat a dozen or two a week, and I understand that as well. And I'm paying the same price as everybody else does. I don't, even though I'm a poultry educator, I don't get a discount.
No free
so
eggs.
I pay exactly what everybody else does. Yes.
And so what's your advice? Yeah. You know, first, okay. So I'll talk about the birds, the hens themselves, in just a second. But
sure.
So. A couple of things. Number one is I started doing things like, well, if I'm cooking, I'll maybe do some egg whites. I find that the pasteurized egg whites, I can find those. So I've done some alternatives and things of that nature. So,
yeah,
you know, your advice, you know, Dr. Martin, is you.
Well, you need to be careful with that because the functionality of the egg is such that you may be losing functionality in your recipe. So if the recipe allows for egg whites to be substituting eggs, the whole egg, then maybe you can do that. But egg yolks especially help as an emulsifier. And so we need to think about that, those ratios. So a lot of recipes have measured ingredients going into it to have the optimal effect. For example, an angel food cake, exactly correct. That's all egg white. It's not egg yolk. So you can have an angel food cake from scratch and you'll never have to use a yolk. But there's other recipes. For example, if you're making homemade noodles, which I've done before, it takes an entire egg to make it work. So you just need to be careful and see if substitution is possible with the particular recipe.
Dr. Gregory Martin, so we're finding out your other talents. You're making us all hungry.
Yeah, right?
I love it. We would love to have a cooking show with you and do your homemade noodles,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've made all kinds of things. You know, the one thing I haven't made yet is a souffle, and I do have a ramekin. I just haven't had the time to do it.
I love it.
I got a question
I've memorized Julia Child's shows talking about the yes. You know, making a souffle, but I just haven't had the chance to do it yet.
I got a question that comes from YouTube from Fishes and Mike. Are we allowed to call you an expert, sir?
Oh
my gosh! Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I actually do have a button that says "Ask me a question. I'm an expert."
So, that's great.
Yeah, we do have a lot of farmers in our area that are concerned about this. Simply because you're doing your normal job, you have all these birds that you're responsible for, and all of a sudden they all become sick and they all start dying, and then everything comes to a complete halt for a month to a month and a half. And depending on the type of farm you have, the amount of time you're out of work could vary. With meat-type chickens, for example, is fairly short. turnaround, but for an egg laying facility, it takes 16 weeks for a chicken to be ready to go to lay eggs. And so we're very, very sensitive to this, and this is one of the reasons why we in Extension have been pushing out the idea of biosecurity. And most of our commercial folks are doing a great job of being biosecure.
So what does that mean, biosecurity?
Biosecurity is just similar to what you would see in a hospital situation. When you go into an operating room, for example, you gown up. You put things on to help protect the patient from anything that you may have on your clothing. Mm-hmm. And we do the same thing in chicken houses where we actually, as we come in, we change out of our street clothes and we put on clothing that is only worn inside the houses so that we're not bringing anything from the outside to the inside of the house.
That's what I...
And then we wash in. We just like a surgeon that scrubs in. We wash in. We wash our hands. We wash our rubber boots going into the houses, so that we just don't spread anything from the outside to the inside of the house. So that break, it's a logical break in the pathway of people coming in to work with the birds, simply because with our the way we sit in the country, we sit in a major flyway for wild birds to fly over us. And so there's two major migrations, spring and fall. And so we have wild birds that are flying over. And unfortunately, these wild birds have become very, very ill with this virus. And they fly at night. And so we don't know what we're stepping in sometimes when we're walking up to those barns. And so we have to take extra precautions to make sure that there's nothing we're tracking into these chicken houses. So we've done fairly well with that.
So with the biosecurity measures, so when we, and last night I was out and about running errands, and there was a flock of geese flying, and I thought, oh, those are darn geese, and I got the avian bird flu. But is it mostly geese, or what migratory birds other than geese are we talking about?
Well, geese and ducks, waterfowl. Most of the time we see it in waterfowl more than anything else, simply because they cluster together. You see flocks of them together. It's not just like a lone eagle or a lone hawk or so. But we also see them in secondary birds such as raptors, which are hawks and vultures and others that prey on, the sick and the weak. Usually they go after them and or scavenge them, and those birds in turn become sick as well because they're eating infected birds.
Do any of them serve? Here's my question about it, thinking about it. Do any of the migratory birds seem to have a better chance of surviving? And I'd say the same for the hens. I mean, has anybody taken some of the hens and quarantined them and said, do we have some that, the opposite, I guess?
No. It's been my experience that once these birds become ill, it progresses rather rapidly. We've seen in some cases where the birds look perfectly healthy, and 2 hours later we had, 30% death loss because of how quickly the virus moves. It's very similar to what we see when someone gets pneumonia. It's an upper respiratory disease, and so it overtakes the bird. They become heavily fevered and heavily congested, and it just causes them to shut down. And so, if we didn't do anything, for example, and say, well, just let nature take its course and see if somebody survives, that would be kind of tough to watch because it's a very, very severe disease.
So the other thing
is, if you're counting on your flock to survive, and you had 10,000 birds and 4,000 of them die here, there, and everywhere, it would take quite a while just to move those birds out. So
what about
typically what we do is that we work with the Department of Agriculture and the USDA to, first of all, diagnose the birds to see if they have avian influenza versus any other type of respiratory disease. And then if it's confirmed, then we go ahead and euthanize those birds taking down the few to protect the many.
So what about...
For example, I'm sitting in Lancaster County alone here, and we have over 16 million birds that are laying hens.
16 million?
So that's more than the people here. 16 million.
Wow.
So we're not only feeding those of us in Pennsylvania, but we're feeding New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts. Name a state on the eastern seaboard, and I can tell you that we have truckloads of eggs moving from Pennsylvania into those states. Even Miami, Florida. I was surprised.
And you're telling me that with all these friends, all these chickens, you can't get a free, you know, dozen for you. I got a question, no. though. I walk my dog off, and there's a field, and oftentimes I see remains of goose there. And I'm concerned because I hear you and Dawn talking about the transmission by Canadian geese and other migratory birds.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
As a human, or if my dog is walking there, should I be concerned for myself or my dog? Could this transmit to human dogs? Where does it stand with that?
It depends on how fresh the dead is, but yes, I would be concerned. I would not allow my dog to be free running around when there's waterfowl in the area. I would not be visiting parks right now where there's a pond full of ducks there. I wouldn't be feeding bread to ducks at the ponds. Have you ever seen bread in the wild?
Nope.
No. So why would we want to feed ducks bread? Because it's not a normal thing for their diet.
I don't mean to be graphic, but how about feces,
not,
sir?
Yeah, but then you're standing in droppings, you know, mm-hmm. and then now you're carrying it around.
That's nasty.
So I would try to avoid parks at this time where there's waterfowl. If you see a dead animal out in the field, you can call the game commission. They do have a phone number that I can send mm-hmm. to you guys that you can post on your website. But those things need to be known, and that way we can monitor that as well.
And so what about this? Because I have read, doctor, that they do have a bird flu vaccine that's in the – we're hearing it's not commercial, but it's out there. It's being researched.
Yes, currently researched, yes. And we're moving forward with that. The research continues on, and we're negotiating how are we going to deploy that. It's very similar to what we saw with the COVID vaccine. It took a while for it to be developed, and then we had to figure out a plan to disperse this vaccine. This virus tends to affect older poultry more than it does younger poultry, and so it could very well end up where we will be vaccinating older flocks like breeder birds that live for 2 or 3 years and see if we can protect those birds from the flu.
And so as far as...
But that all is still in preliminary stages, and there's no active vaccinations going on right now.
And another question I have, because we're monitoring our YouTube chat, if you have a question, but also I'm getting some different messages here. And one is, what about, because some people have said, well, I'm going to have my own little chicken coop in my backyard and I'll protect it. Do you see that happening where people are trying to get chicks, have their own hens? Is that something that's...
Yeah, we did. We saw an uptick in the growth of backyard flocks during COVID, where people wanted to stay kind of compartmentalized and have their own food sources. And certainly, you know, it is a consideration, but you have to make sure that it's allowable in your particular area where you live, because mm-hmm. There are some townships that prohibit or cities that prohibit keeping poultry. So you need to check into that. The other thing is that these backyard flocks also get sick. We had six backyard flocks come down sick with this disease this season. And so it affects both large flocks as well as small flocks.
Wow. And what about, I know Dan mentioned, you know, the dog or even humans, which is rare. But what about other mammals? You know, the thing about, you know, cattle, pigs, other farm animals.
Is there a concern?
That seems more likely.
Serious?
And are you worried about that as far as undercooked meat?
No. First of all, our products that we find in the supermarkets, our meat, milk, and eggs, are safe to eat simply because they're tested before they are processed. The other thing is that cooking does help kill anything, bacteria and viruses on our foods. And so I strongly suggest that you follow USDA guidances for temperatures in cooking meat and eggs. Eggs should be cooked to while they're, you know, the whites are firm and the yolks are heated. And it is not a foodborne illness if the food is properly handled. So our milk, for example, is pasteurized. It's gone through a heat process to where it has killed anything that was there. And they're also testing all the milk in Pennsylvania at the plants so that mm-hmm. if anything does show up, which it hasn't, we haven't seen anything at all at the plants.
Thank God.
You know, they would be the first to know, and they would be able to stop anything from going into the milk supply.
Dr. Gregory
so
Martin.
There are things in place that we don't know, you know, a lot, most of the average consumers don't know, but there are, you know, rules and laws for food safety and handling of food so that it keeps our food supply the safest in the world.
Dr. Gregory Martin, is there anything else you want to share with us about? I mean, there's so much information.
From you
Let me
too?
Just finish, though.
Yeah.
If information and disinformation. And so is there anything else that you wish to, you know, that you've heard recently? I had seen a doctor report that the theory was that this has gone airborne, for example. You know, is there something that you want to put out there that maybe is more recent that you just want to dispel or educate people about?
Well, there was another question I heard in the background. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, there was just one from YouTube, sir, that asked whether or not they need to be concerned about raw yolk. Raw yolk.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of eating any kind of raw food products. So yolks should not be consumed raw.
How about runny?
There's Avidin in there that ties up biotin in your system, and so you should be partially cooking those yolks. When we're making ice cream, for example, there are recipes where you temper the eggs first, cooking them slightly to render them safe so that you're not going to get sick from, you know, ice creams or cookie dough. People eat cookie dough. I wouldn't recommend anything that any type of raw product that's supposed to be cooked. So cook your steaks, cook your chicken, cook your eggs, so forth. But as far as if something to say, that the main thing is that our, you know, only 2% of our workforce is active in agriculture, and about half of that is involved in animal ag. And so the, you know, the exposure of avian flu to the general public is really quite rare. Mm-hmm. Those that do work on farms have to take extra precautions to make sure that they protect themselves. Many of us are taking annual flu shots just to protect ourselves from people flu.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can have transmission through droplets, but usually you have to be in close contact with the individual, you know, to get the transmission. So it's very similar to what I call the sneeze factor. If you're within area of a sneeze, you know, there could be droplets sent from one individual to another. But I've worked in the field on this, and I've been, you know, directly exposed to all this, and no ill effects. So it is, you know, it, because I practice good biosecurity. So I wash in and I wash out,
mm-hmm.
and we take our precautions.
Yes.
So meat, milk, and eggs is good to eat. Make mm-hmm. sure you cook it properly. And if you have questions, you can always go to our extension website, extension.psu.edu, and search for information there. We have a wide variety of subjects. We have extension offices in all 67 counties within the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't find, you know, if we don't know the answer, we can find the answer for you.
Yeah, my son Michael's actually in Abington, but you're in Lancaster, is that right?
Yeah, I'm headquartered in Lancaster, yes.
So, listen, Dr. Gregory Martin, Penn State University, thank you so much for joining us. You've been gracious with your time. Really hope you come back. Thank you, and maybe we'll do a cooking show. Make those noodles.
Yeah, maybe we can do a cooking show. That'd be great. I'm a closet foodie. I'd love to cook and be happy to talk a little bit about functionality of poultry and eggs.
Wonderful.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dr. Gregory Martin. Fabulous.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.